In the summer of 2019, with a certain amount of trepidation, I attended a summer party at the Buffalo News. It would be the first time I'd been back in the newspaper building since I stepped down as editor in 2012 to become the public editor of the New York Times. When I arrived, I found a festive scene. Cocktails and oysters were served on a balcony overlooking the Lake Erie Harbor, and the new construction at the city's canalside development, which housed shops, restaurants, and, in winter, a skating rink near the arena where the Buffalo Sabres played their NHL games. Buffalo, once the eighth largest city in the United States, and the bustling eastern terminus of Great Lakes shipping, until the St. Lawrence Seaway came along in 1959, had fallen on hard times when the steel and auto plants hit the skids in the 1980s. The Bethlehem Steel Plant in Lackawanna, the small city just south of Buffalo where I was born and raised, was once the largest steel factory in the nation, employing 20,000 workers. It shut down in 1982, leaving a huge, largely abandoned industrial carcass on the Lake Erie waterfront. But in recent years, Buffalo has bounced back economically and has become an unlikely darling of tourism roundups of coolest cities to visit. It landed on a list of best places for millennials to settle, and my son, a young public defender, was one of them. He lives in a rehabbed industrial building downtown, where the high ceilings and low rents are the envy of his coastal friends. Whether Buffalo's resurgence has benefited the city's large poor population was far less certain. Inside the newspaper building, as I feared, the changes were breathtaking. Home to 1,000 employees not so long ago, it now employed less than half of that. Chatting with my former colleagues on the executive committee and others in the know, I heard nothing encouraging. These conversations left me with the depressing sense that the paper, even if it endured, would be vastly changed over the next 5 years. Its staff likely would continue to shrink, and it might eventually publish in print only on Sundays, if at all. It was tough to hear, but it resonated with everything I knew from covering the national media scene for the Washington Post. Still, this was personal. This was where I had grown up, written thousands of stories, met and married another reporter when we were in our 20s, won writing awards, hired scores of journalists, and even hopped in an ambulance when a pregnant reporter went into labor. It was in this building's first-floor auditorium that the newsroom's journalists gave me a standing ovation when I was named the paper's first female managing editor. That was one of the great thrills and honors of my life. In short, this was my world, and it was suffering. For several weeks in every recent summer, I've moved back to the Buffalo area and worked from a family cottage, always arranging immediately for home delivery of the paper. It would land on my front deck in its orange plastic bag by 6 a.m. most mornings. The idea hit me hard that perhaps next summer, or the following one, that would no longer be possible. That notion was just about unimaginable for me. After all, I had spent an entire professional lifetime there. As I prepared to emerge from Northwestern University's Medill School of Journalism with my newly minted master's degree in 1980, I was lucky enough to have summer internship offers at both of my hometown papers, the Morning Buffalo Courier Express and the Buffalo Evening News. I wasn't sure what to do, so I put the question to my father, a Buffalo defense attorney. I remember his words. "The News is the dominant paper." Dominant sounded good. I took the News internship. My mother, eager for me to stay local at the end of the summer tryout, used some equally memorable words as she pushed me to excel and to make my presence known to the powers that be. "Ingratiate yourself," she said. I didn't like the sound of that. I wanted to be known for my journalism, not for my winning personality.